shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
This is about the fact that we have a $3.6 billion deficit.
Well, it's the same spirit. I mean, it's a massive...
It's incredible. And, you know, I just... what the crazy...
Thank you all very much for coming out today.
I like winning.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and whether we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. And that's just where it's at. All right, doctors are handing out phony letters to protesters in Wisconsin, phony excuses from work in Wisconsin, the latest revelation from the activities there. A 20-year-old wins the Daytona 500. Trevor Bayne wins the Daytona 500, the youngest ever, by 5 years over Jeff Gordon, who won it in 1997. Plus, bicyclists are about to get some added protections in the city of Los Angeles and possibly elsewhere. We're going to talk to Dr. Ron Tarner in a moment about that next hour. We got Jeff Dowder up. Jeff Dowder is going to be joining us next hour. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL. And tonight our affiliate spotlight is on KKAT 860 in Salt Lake City, KKAT 860 AM in Salt Lake City. And we have two new affiliates in Alexandria, Louisiana, KEZP 104.3 FM, and in Victor Valley, California, KIXW 960 AM. For those of you who are brand new listeners to the show, check out our website, philhendryshow.com. We have live streaming audio, live streaming video of the show. And you also have our archives, as well as our shop, as well as our email. You get guaranteed email response from Phil. It's a little slow these days because we've been a little busy. And the fact is, I'm answering all the mail myself, so I don't have staff doing it for me. I'm slow as hell. What can I tell you? But anyway, you get email response as well as access to our blogs, our podcasts. It's fun, Ben. It's going to get a lot funner here when we get our video equipment in. We're going to start out here tonight with Dr. Ron Tarner, who's actually in Miami this evening. I think he's in Miami. And, yeah, he is in Miami Beach. They're at a convention, climate change. I don't know what it's called, Dr. Tarner. Forgive me, but I think it's some kind of a climate change convention, right?
That's correct, Phil. We're at the Denver chapter. Asked me to come out here to Miami and represent them at a global climate change action committee conference that we're having. To get all of our chapters on the same page. We're entering a new year, and there's going to be another big fight in the Congress on getting this global climate change legislation passed, which so far with a Republican Congress is going to be an uphill battle. There's no question about it.
All right, now this is a law that you've had a lot to do with getting passed. Bicyclist rights. Anti-harassment ordinance pedals into town. A draft ordinance was released by the Los Angeles City's Attorney's Office this week that aims to protect bicyclists from being harassed simply for being bicyclists.
That's correct.
Now, it says here, pending council approval, the ordinance will allow harassed, assaulted, threatened, or intentionally distracted bicyclists to bring suit against the driver in civil court, reports the Los Angeles Department of Transportation bike blog.
That is correct, Phil.
Can you give me a little illumination on some of the things I've mentioned?
Well, the fact is that we have asked the city of Los Angeles, Phil, and we've also asked the city of Denver, Colorado, and a number of other municipalities around the country to recognize that people have a right to ride a bicycle. The motion to draft the anti-harassment legislation was introduced by a good man, Bill Rosendahl. The pending ordinance creates a civil cause of action for bicyclists.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, what it means is bicyclists will have their rights protected now in a civil court, and they will be able to sue for amounts not less than $1,000, attorney's fees, and punitive damages if they are harassed because of their status as bicyclists. And this is, to me, for those of us who've worked so long, I know that I'm involved in science as anti-global warming advocate. But this is the way I get to work in the morning, and the way that I travel, and the way many people do on a bicycle. and to see our rights after so many years of struggle protected now at this level is exciting.
All right. It also says among the prohibited activities against bicyclists, you may not, well, physical assault, that goes without saying.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't, because...
Well, it's against the law to assault a person.
It's against the law to assault a person, but the law against assault does not take into consideration the very vulnerable position that a bicyclist is in. It does not take into consideration the value, the valuable niche that the bicyclist occupies in our society. We are riding our bicycles every day, some of us over 100 miles a day, Phil, quite literally, and acting as an example to the American people on what a responsible citizen does when he is transporting himself, also what a responsible citizen can look like in terms of physical health. One of the things that I'm most proud of is the good physical shape that I've been in, other members of our club, and there are many thousands of clubs across the United States. No, we don't have laws against assaulting cyclists. We do have laws against assault.
If you were assaulted, though, what I'm trying to say, Ron, and we're talking with Dr. Ron Tarner on a new anti-harassment ordinance against cyclists, meaning if you're an automobile driver, you may not harass specifically cyclists, assault specifically cyclists, or otherwise interfere with the safety of a cyclist, because that will be a whole other area of law that you're going to have to deal with, including civil lawsuits. All right. I want to ask you this question. Our number, by the way, folks, is 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL. I want to ask you this. And it says it creates a civil cause of action for cyclists.
Well, Phil, I know what you're going to ask. You're asking me about the special place that cyclists will have within law. It's not unprecedented. We have special protections for African-Americans. We have special protections for homosexuals. We have special protections for women. We recognize that there are segments of our society that need protection.
Well, there's segments of our society that need protection. This is the thing that I wanted to get into here, and I thank you for articulating that. At what point in this world, this crazy world of ours, Dr. Tarner, did cyclists all of a sudden fall into a category?
Phil?
No, hold on. What point did cyclists all of a sudden fall into the category of a minority group that needs special legislative protection?
Phil, it's a dangerous area for you to begin to impugn the rights of individuals simply because you don't understand their minority status.
And are you telling me that people on bicycles are a minority, per se?
I am telling you that we have been the victims of assault. We have been hit with automobiles. We've been hit with gunfire. We have been targeted time and again, Phil.
And I don't doubt that you've been targeted. Have not pedestrians been targeted? You know,
what do you mean, have not pedestrians been targeted? I don't know of any research.
I can tell you that if we, well, you know what, you may not know the research, but I can tell you perhaps that if we had pedestrians who were organizing.
No, you're getting it a little bit over your head here, Phil, but go ahead.
Well, I may be getting it over my head, but if we had pedestrians organizing and saying, you know what, it's really unsafe to walk in this country, to walk down a street in this country. If I'm not on a sidewalk, if I'm just walking, we are assaulted, we are hit, we're run over. If you're a young person or a woman, you're subject to probably even worse dangers. If they organized and they began to pull up some of the statistics, what do you think they'd find?
I don't know, but I can tell you if we did find that there is a higher than average incidence of assaulting people who walk, and people who walk had the same niche in society, that they are physically fit, that they are giving an example to the rest of society on how to travel in this day and age of global warming, that they are people who are to be respected because they show that they have, an elevated intelligence, or if you want to call it, or a superiority. I'm not saying we're supermen, but we are. In a way better than people in automobiles. So why are they allowed to drive by me and yelled something at me the other day. I was called, if I could use the language.
Go ahead.
Well, I had a van ride by me the other day, called me a fairy and a fruit, and gay this and gay that because I wear bicycle shorts. I am not gay, but by the same token, because I wear bicycle shorts, he thought I was, and so he issues a homophobic statement toward me. Technically, you could call that anti-gay. But no, what we do is we call it anti-cyclist. And
why would that be anti-gay if you're not gay?
Because he called me a fruit and a fairy and used these pejoratives. Now, Phil, the law...
The problem I've got with this law is the following thing.
I think I heard what your problem was.
No, the problem I got with the law is the following thing. We now, and the guy said it right here, this Bill Rosendahl creates a civil cause of action for bicyclists who are harassed because of their status as bicyclists.
That is correct, yes.
That sounds remarkably like saying because of one's status as a black person, because of one's status as a white person.
You know, that foments so much discord between cyclists and blacks. We are trying in common cause, Phil, to have these things affected. And when you say what you just said, black people resent us the same way they resent the gays. And what we're trying to do is pull the three groups together so that we have an effective...
You're trying to pull together gay people, cyclists, and black people in what?
If I can finish the statement.
Go ahead.
If I can finish the statement?
Go ahead.
Pull the black people, cyclists, gays, women together in common cause as a minority group that has been harassed long enough.
A minority group harassed long enough how?
I just got done telling you.
Well, being called a fruit and a fairy, what else?
I told you there are people being shot at, there are people that are being honked at, there are people that are, their safety is compromised when someone drives by and... if you have someone driving by and you're on a bike, hey, just like that, did that scare you?
It jarred me a little bit.
Well, imagine if you're on a bicycle and someone rides by and you're on the bike, hey, and they do it on purpose, and they do it to scare you, and enough of fear goes through you, and you drop your bike in traffic, and you're crushed by a truck or an automobile.
Very dramatic.
Very true.
All right. Very true. Very dramatic. We're with Dr. Ron Tarner here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, Radio for Patriots by Patriots, a new bicycling anti-harassment ordinance for cyclists in Los Angeles, meaning you cannot harass cyclists, you cannot assault cyclists. They have a new status, and that is a group of people who need to be protected because of their status as cyclists, and they are going to be protected by way of law and civil suit and so on and so forth. You heard Dr. Tarner saying they're trying to create common cause with black people and gays. Are cyclists a protected minority or should be a protected minority in this country? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and we're with you here every night, Monday through Friday, till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, here on Radio for Patriots by Patriots. And another example, ladies and gentlemen, of, I think, government run amok, and, Dr. Tarner, with all due respect, to say that cyclists have a special status.
I can explain something to you if I could, Phil, and this, I think, will help. As bicyclists, you look at women, all right? Let's forget about the cycle. Look at women. Women have the right to vote. Women can go to a voting booth. But do you understand that as a cyclist, I can't even ride my bike to a voting booth without being harassed by some... I was told I can't use
We'd rather you not use that phrase.
All right, well, can I say douchebag? Because
yeah, you can use that.
All right. I mean, I cannot ride my bike to a voting booth without being harassed by a douchebag in his car. So I have fewer rights than a woman. You keep going on about special status. We have hooked together with blacks in some of the communities as well as the gays, and what we're trying to do is present a common front, a common front. Understand that, Phil.
Now, what was the and this was also a part of the legislation that was promoted, being ticketed on the freeway?
Yes, I was ticketed on the freeway because I got up on the freeway to save some time, and exactly what happened, you would expect to happen, happened. I was being honked at by truck drivers. I was called fairy and queer. I was yelled at. I was flipped off.
You're riding a bicycle on the freeway.
I happen to have the ability to ride a 10-speed or a multi-speed 20-speed bike in a variety of vehicle situations, Phil, as do most 10-speed or multi-speed cyclist. So please don't make that into a bigger deal than it is.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, the number. Let me go to a phone call here. On the line is Tom in Bakersfield, California. Tom, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show here with Dr. Ron Tarner.
Hi, Mr. Henry. Yeah, you got a great
yes,
show
sir.
There. I just want to put in my two cents.
You.
You know, this is a little ridiculous because there's already plenty of laws on the books against disturbing the peace, against hitting somebody with your automobile. There's a lot more important things to discuss what's happening in this nation, the financial collapse of our economy, the fact that we've got criminals that called Illuminati that were in Skull and Bones that are running the CIA that are in bed with the mafia and organized crime, and they get billions of dollars a year in black money under the table under the guise of national
security. Are you married to a man?
What kind of a question?
Get out of here, you jive-ass man. Jesus. These guys...
Well, there you go. That's the kind of right-wing jackass that you're going to get on a program like this when I'm talking about cyclist rights.
And that isn't the kind of guy, okay? That guy wants those metal cases from wherever they're calling from. But the fact is, you are here talking about something I wouldn't say is as radical, but to say that bicyclists need a special status...
Well, the Los Angeles City Council agrees with me.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Brian in Chicago. Go ahead, Brian. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hey, how you doing? My point is everybody wants a special status, and everybody wants to have this feeling of being put first. There's enough laws, like last caller, enough laws about disturbing the peace, harassing people in general. There's enough laws that the cyclists need to follow.
Because assault is one thing, but assaulting a black man, that's hateful, and assaulting me, you understand there's a difference between assaulting someone and assaulting a woman, let's say.
And there are laws against that, and the fact that you have just said to me, somebody...
And so I get to have status just like a woman, because I'm vulnerable.
Is that why you're claiming status, because you feel vulnerable?
I'm not vulnerable because I'm not physically stronger. If I get off the bike, I feel I could handle myself, but on the bike, I'm vulnerable. Yes.
You get on the bicycle, you know the risk involved. Just like any other person that gets on the interstate with their vehicle, with their motorcycle, with their moped, up here in Chicago, they run land through the city.
Yes.
They know, and there's specific laws that mandate how you interact with those people on the road. Now, if
there's
you
no law against,
are
if,
not,
if you're on a bicycle, Brian, if you're on a bicycle, and you're on a bicycle and you're concentrating on the traffic ahead, and I drive up next to you, and I go, "Hey," now that's going to scare you. That could scare you enough to cause you to turn the bicycle.
You've already made that point. And I drive a little truck. I drive it through the city. I have people flying by me, 65, 70 miles an hour. Does it scare me? Yes, but I know. That's the situation I'm putting myself
in. They're driving the truck.
What if they went by you and went, hey. Anybody else?
Well, what?
Have to step aside.
What if they go by you?
Put you on a pedestal. And that's all you're asking.
Brian, look. No, I'm not asking for anything other than protection, because if I'm on a bicycle, and let's say a guy drives by me and I'm on a bicycle, he goes, "You're queer." Okay, now he's calling me queer. He did it loud. He's trying to get me into an accident. He's trying to hurt
you're
me.
Right. And then you have every right to go and press charges on that person.
No, I don't. No, I don't. No, I don't. No,
how
no,
else
I
you
don't.
Want to do it?
No, I don't. No, you don't. No, I don't. Because the cop's going to say to me,
What did he do? He yelled at me. Well, that's not against the law. And it's not. So, this is the law. See? Yeah, now I got Brian thinking about it. This is the law.
Well, I don't know that you've got Brian thinking about it.
Well, I've got you thinking. You guys aren't saying anything, so you must agree with me, because the fact is, if you drive by me and you go, you queer, and I fall down in front of a truck and I'm crushed beyond recognition, that's what you say.
Phil Hendry. 877-876-7445. We'll be right back. Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Well, we're talking about, with Dr. Ron Tarner here, we're talking about new status for people on bicycles, okay? And the fact that people on bicycles deserve to have a protection of the law apart from other people. And that's the part that's got me, you know, a little confused and also a little upset.
What upsets you, Phil, about the...
Here's what's upsetting me. You guys are on bicycles. You weren't born with a bicycle affixed to you. You weren't born gay. You weren't born black. You weren't born a woman. You weren't born with a bicycle affixed to you.
Well, that's an argument I've heard you make before.
Well, I make that argument many, many times, Dr. Tarner, because it's one thing to say that a person is being victimized based on an aspect of their person that they can't help. Maybe it's a disability. Maybe it's their skin color.
No, I understand. I've heard your philosophy expressed many times, Phil, and it doesn't. You're never going to get people to understand that. You're never.
Well, I'm going to say it. Well, can I give it a try?
Well,
do you understand it?
I understand it. But I know that other people don't understand it. And so I'm using the fact that they don't understand it to get my particular issue put forward, Phil. This is an important... I'm a bicyclist, and I want this protection. Now, people in automobiles have long since treated people on bicycles as if, and I'll say it again, as if I'm a fairy wearing my tight pants.
It's not all about being a fairy. Is that all they ever call you?
Well, they're telling me, get off the road, you look like an idiot, all of these things. They don't know, first of all, that physically I'm very fit. They don't know that were I able to get to ride my bike fast enough, I could catch them, and I could conceivably, and I'm not saying I would ever do this, but I could conceivably pull them out of their car and give them a beating. All right? You're understanding that, right?
I understand that bicyclists are in good shape, physical shape.
We're in great shape. If I were able to ride my bike fast enough to catch a car, I would catch the guy and I could give him a beating. We're not able to do that, number one. Number two, when a car drives by and yells at me, hey, queer, and then drives away, I don't have the chance to yell anything back. All right? Number four, when he tells me to go faster so he could turn, I could go fast, but I don't go as fast as an automobile. So where are my protections in a very volatile situation? They're nowhere. I need to be able to respond to this, and that's why we needed this ordinance, Phil.
All right. Well, you don't need the ordinance, and it's a beyond belief that the ordinance was ever passed in Los Angeles. I don't know if it's been passed automatically. It's beyond belief to me, though, that it's even exists. Creating a civil cause of action for bicyclists. An award trebling the damages in amount not less than $1,000, attorney's fees.
Yes, we need all of those things because we're out on the road with people that are not that smart. And let's talk about that.
I'd like to talk about that. You've been telling me that you're entitled to these trebled fees and you're entitled to this protection because people in cars are not as bright as you. Now, how do you know that?
What do you mean, how do I know that? It's obvious that...
Yeah, how do you know that?
Well, it's obvious. If you were intelligent enough to negotiate traffic in a bicycle, you'd be doing it.
Some people don't want to ride a bike because it's not fast enough, because it isn't safe enough.
There you go, right there. Do you understand that every time you say it's not safe enough, You are making my argument for me. Now, the city of Los Angeles has seen fit through the cycling, through the Department of Transportation cycling blog, to pass an ordinance that protects us from a lot of this, forgive me, uneducated and a lot of blue-collar people out of the cars. And
are there any white-collar people out in the cars?
There are people who are white-collar, but they are generally more educated, which means they generally ride cycles, they ride a green cycle, which is what we call a multi-speed cycle, and many people who can't afford them can't afford them. Who are they? More the blue-collar. So I'm really out there being exposed to a blue-collar mentality. Most of them in trucks. I'm on a bicycle. That spells one thing. That spells injury, possibly even death, and at the very least, someone riding by and yelling, and I'm sorry for being dramatic, hey, you queer, you know, and then riding off. And so we have needed these special protections, yes, Bill. And, you know, I'll tell you one other thing. At the end of the day, the average person doesn't understand it and will go with it because bicycles are as American as Bob and apple pie.
And you're admitting that this is a ridiculous, that you don't deserve any special protection.
I didn't say that.
Well, you're telling me at the end of the day, people will go with it because they don't understand it.
Well, I think they will, yes. If they did understand it, then they'd go with it even more. But they'll go with this because they don't want to be seen as racist.
There's not a thing about being, you know, that's the funny thing about this. 877-876-7445 here on the Phil Henry Show. You just heard what he said. Now cyclists are protected like black folks, and if you don't want the cycling ordinance, you're racist. So Dr. Ron Tarner, who's being victimized by, blue-collar truck drivers, being called queer, and most of these people are not as intelligent, and most of them couldn't defend themselves if they actually slowed the car up enough so he could get out and beat them. These people now he gets to be protected from with an L.A. city ordinance, and it could come to your city, too. 877-876-7445. Also, Jeff Downer tonight on the Daytona 500, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline. Dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
877-876-7445. Sorry, I stepped all over our announcer there. World-famous Phil Henry Show, radio for Patriots by Patriots. Ron Tarner with us. And you were saying you don't like that slug, huh?
Well, you know, we're my conference that I'm at here in Miami is for the Greening of America, Phil. It's a global climate change conference, an idea sharing, a symposium. And I got a radio show that I'm doing here for Patriots by Patriots, which smacks of an anti-global climate change agenda, but
I don't have any agenda. I have no agenda on climate. You and I have talked about it. Let's stick with bicycles, okay?
Well, I want to stick with bicycles and talk about the hate crimes that have been perpetrated against cyclists.
And hate crimes?
Yes, hate crimes.
And I got done. Well,
Phil, you don't have all the answers. You know,
all of a sudden, you know, I saw Bill O'Reilly and, you know, Bill O'Reilly thinks that there are hate crime, you know, that there's hate being expressed against him. And
well, so you're criticizing Bill O'Reilly.
I'm just saying that there's all of a sudden the idea that hate crime is going to encompass cyclists.
If you think about cyclists this way, we are those people who have been trying to ride on the side of the road all these years to cut down on the use of gasoline, to cut down on the creation of pollution, to create a more responsible way of traveling, and what we've gotten for our trouble is insult, and we've been honked at. We're called every name of the book. When I went up on the 210 that afternoon, because I had to get over to Caltech, because I was doing a paper and I was beating two of my colleagues over there. The insult that I was that I was exposed to was beyond belief. Honked at, somebody swerved and tried to hit me. The dust and the heat.
You're on a freeway on a bicycle. That's against the law.
It's against the law to assault a man. It's against the law, or should be. You say that's against the law. All right. You know that it used to be against the law for black people in the South to sit at a lunch counter.
And here you going again. You're going to compare cyclists with black people. Is that it? You're telling me that a black person's experience at a lunch counter in the South is the same as a cyclist who goes up on a freeway?
Why is that difficult for you to understand? Why is that?
It's difficult for me to understand because you are allowed to go on the freeway.
No, I'm not allowed to go on the freeway. I was given a ticket, Phil.
And no, you are, but your mode of transportation must be an automobile.
Well, you don't get it. And it's frustrating for all of us who have ever gotten on two wheels. We say the two-wheeler will always be exposed to the exhaust of the four-wheeler in more ways than one. And what we call exhaust in the world of the two-wheeler, Phil, is not so much exhaust for a car, but it's bull blank.
And all right, if I'm laying a lot of exhaust on you, but here's my point. You have said that you are not allowed on a freeway. I mean, black people were not allowed at lunch counters.
That is correct. And the way gay people are not allowed in the military.
And I think it's an absolutely asinine and absurd comparison.
That is your favorite phrase, Phil, in lieu of having an argument. So what's your argument? Give me an argument. Don't tell me it's asinine.
All right, here's my argument. Number one, no one said you can't be on a freeway.
Yes, they did.
No, they did not.
Yes, they did. I can't go on a freeway.
You can go on a freeway in a car.
I don't drive a car.
No. 877.
Well, what does that mean? Well, yeah, that's your way of blowing the whole thing off and calling me a queer. Just like they did.
I haven't used that word at all. I haven't used that word. Boy, you're reaching tonight. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Randy in Charlotte, North Carolina. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I was just asking some questions for your person there. Just questioning his legitimacy of worrying about people calling him names when he's riding his bicycle and worrying about his laws. I don't care if they pass any more laws for him, but you're going to tie up the court systems with all this kind of nonsense when we've got a lot of other problems out there. And the other thing is...
We're trying to protect cyclists, sir. We're trying to protect people who are two-wheelers.
That's fine. I understand. Let me ask you this, then. If you go... The bicyclists that are out there today that are riding, are they not supposed to follow the laws of the road? Because I I see people riding bicycles in their uniforms that they ride in, which is fine, but they blow through red lights while cars are having to stop at red lights. They get on a two-lane road that's heavily traveled in both directions, riding all the way across both all the way across the lane where you can't get around them, going 20 miles an hour, don't have enough courtesy to move over and let the cars pass that are going the speed limit. Does that not create a problem for you guys as well?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, the law says that a cyclist, just like a man driving a tractor, has the right to the road. A man on a bicycle are both sometimes going less than the speed limit, Phil. And I think if you know the song of International Harvester by Craig Morgan, he says, he tells everybody to stick it up their rear end.
Well, hold on for a minute, because you guys are... All right, I understand.
Off the side of the road to let a
not
car
always,
go by.
Not always.
Well, let me... I want to know. Are you allowed to be in the middle of the road, or are you not?
We are. And see, that shows you that people in cars don't get it.
You guys just want it both ways, and that's fine. You know, you just got to have to take what comes at you.
Well, he's calling me a homosexual again. So you're calling me a fairy.
How's he calling you a fairy? Thank you, sir. How's he calling you a fairy?
Well, he goes, you guys are going to have to take it both ways, and you'll have to take what comes after. These are threatening, almost jail rape terms. And
no, he did not say anything. He said you're going to have to, if that's the case, you're going to have to suffer the consequences.
But you don't see that as a threat.
I don't know if it's a threat. I will tell you this. If the law says you can be in the middle of the road, it's a bad law. But nonetheless, you can be in the middle of the road. You are right about tractors, although tractors are out there trying to negotiate a paved road so they can get back onto a field or whatever it is that they're...
Go ahead. What were you saying?
Tractors can go on a road and then go back onto the field.
Yeah. You don't know anything about farming, do you?
Do you?
Well, no, but I'm listening to tractors. What about bicycles? What do we get to do?
You can stay on the road, too. You know, I think it's a matter of courtesy, and I think you're responding to the anger of people in automobiles and people who have got a problem with you. You're responding to it with sarcasm. You're responding to it with arrogance. You're talking about how badass you look. And
I'm not saying that.
Yes, you did. You said that if you caught up to a guy in a car, you could give him a beating. You're talking about how strong you are. And the people in automobiles, you don't want to give any courtesy to at all.
What courtesy are you talking about when the guy outweighs me by 3,000 pounds? God! I really, seriously question, Phil, and you go on about, the tractor going on the field. It's called a farm.
Oh, okay, sorry. I don't know a lot about tractors. I do know a lot about bikes and cars. Here is Stephen in Salem, Oregon. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
What do you want? I mean, what do you want? You want, like, a parade?
Is he talking to me?
Yes, he is.
Are you
comparing yourself to Gabe? Do you want,
like, I'm telling you that we want
a whole month of
We want an anti-harassment ordinance that's been passed in Los Angeles. We want it passed nationwide, which keeps people from harassing us or from assaulting us or for otherwise causing danger, and we're protected on our status of bicycles, and provides for a treble to damages. So that's what we want, not any of the little funny lines that you wrote down and delivered on the air just now.
That's what I mean about sarcasm and arrogance.
Well, I mean, this guy,
nationwide. I mean, seriously. I mean, what are you? You're comparing yourself to the blacks, okay? You're comparing yourself to the gays, okay? What?
I can compare you to the gays, too.
You are a bicyclist. I am a bicyclist. We're bicyclists. We know the risks.
And what are the risks?
You could get hit by a car. People could pull their door open and you run into
Yeah, but you got to understand something. I ride a bike because I want to. Do you ride a bike because you have to? I want to know the difference between us, because there's got to be a difference between us.
Why do you say that?
Because he doesn't get it.
I love riding my bike.
I know, but is that the only transportation you have?
It is not, but listen.
Okay, you own a car?
You are not going to turn this into you're equal as the blacks or the gays.
Yes, that's exactly what we already have done. We've already done it.
Well, that may be in Los Angeles, but I doubt that it's going to go national.
Well, why not? As L.A. goes, so goes the country.
No, are you kidding me? There's a lot of cities in this country that are not going to be giving you a special bicycle ordinance. Unless there's a hell of a lot of people riding their bikes out there. You know, unless it's a city where there's a lot of people riding bikes. Let's go to another call here. Lathan in Yakima, Washington. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
I appreciate it. First off, I want to start by saying that I truly resent the comment about people who drive cars are less intelligent. I graduated into the medical profession at age 19. I've been accelerated in anything and everything that I've ever done. I drive a car. I drive a car because I have a long commute every day where I go to treat patients, as I said again, in the medical field, because I'm so ignorant or so stupid, as the doctor had put it so eloquently. I go that direction because I have to spend 12 hours a day doing this. I don't have time to hop on a bicycle and bicycle all the way back past my commute the other way around. I also wanted to make the comment that maybe people were making comments about you first off, because the specific person making the comment wasn't very intelligent about your hot pants or the biking pants.
Listen to me.
Listen to me. Would they make those comments to somebody who was wearing a pair of jeans? You can ride a bicycle wearing a clown suit, wearing a pair of jeans, wearing a pair of biker shorts like you choose to. They're not attacking you because you're on a bike. They're attacking you because of some misconceived perception that they have of you. You know, you talk about people being harassed and picked on for specific reasons. I've been intelligent all growing up, and I got harassed and picked on for that. Do we need a special law to protect people that...
Right. When you were a little boy, I think you should have been protected, because I know what it was like. You were very smart. You were probably entered college at a very young age. And so while you knew the answer to a lot of different kinds of mathematical equations, you still couldn't wipe yourself or something. And so people made fun of you. I know what that's like. I think you should have been protected.
I don't believe that I deserve special attention. I don't believe that I deserve
Are you
special
kidding?
Attention because other people
you can't even wipe your own anus?
Inconsiderate comments. Not to mention
Doctor,
the fact
please.
That, if I may, I apologize, I'm not trying to talk over the top of you, but I'd like
All
to
right,
say
I
that
understand.
You made a comment about freeways. Freeways were not
yes.
built for bicycles. Freeways
exactly.
were built for commerce, or rather for travel and commerce across long
can
distances at high rates of speed.
I just want to ask you one thing. When you wear your Spock, when you're in the hospital, do people look at you and think he's probably got a head in a petri dish that he's trying to put onto a monster? I don't know, but maybe they do. And why? Because that's what Hollywood's done to us. We're guys that graft the heads. Forget it.
Well, you don't have to forget it. I just really want to understand where you're coming from. You've called me stupid. You offended all of my
Well, you are stupid.
People.
If you don't recognize
you
that people see you as a ghoul, then you are stupid. People think you graft the heads of models onto the body of your girlfriend.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
But I think ultimately collective bargaining from a federal level...
The greatest president in history, according to the American people, with their limited memory...
There is nothing in this world that would stop a mother.
It's incredible. And, you know, I just... what's the crazy part
she
is...
She indicates that she had been rear-ended.
Come on, take it from Barack Obama.
World-famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and let me tell you, we go places other talk shows can't go. Yes, it's Radio for Patriots by Patriots, and we're keeping our eye on these terrible events globally, one in New Zealand having to do with the earthquake. And I think there's one other event, Bud, if you can, you know, next hour with our news hour with Bud and Robert, we'll be into a lot of this stuff. But this earthquake in New Zealand was quite devastating, and we'll update you on whatever needs to be updated. Our number is 877-876-7445 here on Radio 4 Patriots by Patriots. That's our Patriot line, 877-876-PHIL. And a 20-year-old driver has earned an historic win at the Daytona 500. And joining us this hour to talk about it will be Jeff Dowder. Don't forget our website is philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com for all of your comedy needs. And we have a lot going on over there, including live streaming video of the show, as well as all of those archives. This is the, in our opinion, in our humble opinion, this is the only place really left on the Internet for, you know, a real good radio show website. Thousands of hours of archives to check it out. 877-876-PHIL is our number. Jeff Dowder, who is a professor of mechanical physics, part-time professor of mechanical physics at Caltech University, joins us. And, Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's good to be with you.
Young rookie Trevor Bayne's Daytona 500 victory hasn't sunk in yet. And it's not enough that the Daytona 500 champion turned 20 years old on... 20 years old the day before the race, making him the youngest driver ever to win. He's also the first rookie to ever win this race.
It's incredible. And, you know, I just, what the crazy part is, there's guys, race car drivers, you know, Tony Stewart, so many drivers out there that haven't had the opportunity to win this. So for us to come in at our first one, I mean, I feel almost bad about it, coming in and spoiling all the fun for everybody and getting that 600th win for Ford. And just, you know, but those guys are the ones that laid the foundation. They're the ones that, the reason we still have this sport and I was able to do this. So it's really cool to be the winner of this deal. But, you know, it's because of everybody around me and those legends like you were talking about. I mean, we got to work with Jeff Gordon in that race, a lot of people, and that was just incredible.
Jeff, I know you follow NASCAR, and let's just get to it here. Where do you? I know that you've had a couple of questions, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about this particular Daytona 500 win. Now, you and I were talking, and we didn't get into it, but Jeff Gordon, I think, was the next youngest, and he won the Daytona 500 in 1997. I think he was 25 or 26. Now we have the youngest. Now we have the first rookie. And the first guy to win it his first time at bat. Isn't that what we heard him say? So what are your questions?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the Wood Brothers, who were the team that Trevor Bayne was driving for. I don't want to take anything away from, you know, the people, you know, at NASCAR or the race or any, or you know, any of the sponsoring entities, you know, or the I think it was a Chevrolet he drove, I'm not sure, but I think we have to remember that, you know, racing has changed a lot since the early days of NASCAR racing. You know, I'm not from that part of the country where NASCAR racing got going. You know, we're talking about, you know, the Deep South or parts of the Carolinas, but I did, you know, start following it very early on because I liked the idea of stock American cars, you know, achieving these amazing speeds and these great drivers. But now, as you get toward this period of time, and as things started, you know, that they're investing in more in terms of safety, they invest in more in terms of radio equipment, they invest in more in the engines, you know. I think that, you know, you talk about the engines, you know, we're not talking about grease monkeys anymore. We're talking about people who have to, you know, put the engine, put the motor on a computer, and all of the apparatus in the cockpit, the car that the driver deals with. You know, you're really not dealing with the complications that you did deal with at the dawn of NASCAR racing.
All right. Well, I mean, I've seen the improvements in cars, and we've all seen it, no matter what the level of racing, the automobile, especially at NASCAR, where the cars are no longer these missiles. If you lose control, it's just one big block of steel flying through the air. These automobiles come apart. The cage is safe. The tires are better. The fuel is safer. You know.
Well, yeah, I used to see some flyers. Yeah.
But what are you saying? Is that all you're talking about?
No, I'm what I'm saying is, if you're talking about Trevor Bayne winning this race at 20. You know, good for him, and you know, I'm not going to take nothing away from him, but you can't tell me that took as much, you know, how do you say it, that took as much courage or it took as much stamina to win it as, say, you know, Richard Petty in 1979 or, you know, Buddy Baker in whatever year or, you know, whoever.
And, what do you mean? Okay, explain that.
Well, because you don't have to, as a driver, you don't have to do as much anymore. As a driver, you got the, if you've seen on television, they'll show you the different races on the TV. And one thing you do see are the drivers have the headsets on. You also see that now, and I was watching yesterday, you can hear the communication between the pit and the driver. They're basically telling them everything of what to do, and they're also what I'm trying to say is the cockpit has the ability, in the car has the ability to probably at some point you can autopilot it. Now, I'm not saying that they would
autopilot.
Well, I mean, I'm saying that they do have the technology to do that. I'm not saying necessarily that they would, but you can drive that car from the pit. You can drive that car from the pit.
Let's get down to it. If you put me in that car or put you in that car, could we win the Daytona 500?
It's a good question. That's what I'm trying to say. It's a very good question. I'd like to think that, and I believe that, you know, give me 6 months. And
6 months and you could get in that car and win the Daytona 500?
Because of how advanced racing's gotten. And racing's gotten way advanced. It's gotten way, way down, you know, it's way down the road further down the road than I think a lot of people think that it is.
All right, we're talking here to Jeff Downer. He's with Caltech, a professor of mechanical physics, about the Daytona 500, won by the youngest driver ever yesterday, Trevor Bayne, at the age of 20. Our number is 877-876-7445. And what you're saying here, Professor Downer, is basically winning the Daytona 500 now is nowhere near as difficult as it was how long ago?
Well, I think it's way easier than it was when you mentioned Jeff Gordon in 97, and that was easier. I think it's just it gets easier. But we did pass a certain point where now, you know, the mechanics and everything and the different stuff, you know, that they've got in the car, like the radios and autopilot and the steering wheel is can be probably remote controlled if you want.
I've never heard of that or seen that.
I'm just saying it stands to reason that it would be, that if the driver were to pass out, okay, are you telling me that that car is just going to go haywire and kill, you know, slam into people? I don't think so. What happens is you see the driver's passed out, you take control of that car, and, you know, you could take a few laps in it. I mean, you could drive it around the track a couple of times to get it into the pit.
Well, then why don't they do that when cars are crashing?
Well, because the driver is still in control of the car. I mean, you're not going to take the wheel away from the driver at that point, because then he's going to be fighting for the wheel, not knowing that you've taken over. And
you could tell him by way of radio, let us have the car.
That's not a good time to tell a driver that he's going to, you know, give over control of the car to somebody in the middle of a spin out. You better just let him have it. And, you know, say your prayers, I wouldn't want to take over and say, yeah, I'm going to take over the car now, so just take your hands off the wheel, because if you did that and you got it back to the pit safe, you're going to have a driver jumping out of that car coming after, you know, he's going to come at you, you know. So I would say if a driver passes out, if he faints, when
would a driver faint? I mean, I can understand some kind of a physical problem.
Well, the speeds get pretty hairy. The situations get pretty hairy where a driver might just look at everything he's involved in terms of how intense it all is, and just because it's overwhelming, he could black out or faint just at how intense it is. If he wasn't, you know, in the best of shape, that's when you take over, and it's conceivable that you could win the race even with a driver just slumped over. You know,
you're kidding.
No, I mean, I'm just saying technologically.
I'd love to see the day that a car wins the Daytona 500 with a driver passed out.
That's correct. But, again, not to take anything away from Trevor Bayne, but that's the technology we have now. So if you have a Trevor Bayne winning the Indy 500 now, and you know that Jeff Downer could win it, same way if you gave me 6 months worth of...
You know, I want to interrupt you here. What do you think Trevor Bayne would say to you, or any NASCAR driver say to them, well, you know, the advances in the sport are such that I could take 6 months of training and I could win the Daytona 500. What would they say?
Well, I think they'd have to say, oh, you're crazy, because they got to protect the sport. But I think deep down, you know, and away from the microphones and the cameras, they'd probably resent you for saying how true and real it is.
877-876-7445. The winning of the Daytona 500 by Trevor Bayne yesterday. He says it hasn't sunk in. We have Jeff Downer, a professor of mechanical physics, saying that to win the Daytona 500 now is not that big of a deal than it used to be. And Professor Downer, just so we're comparing, you say, for instance, winning this year's Daytona 500 and Jeff Gordon in 97 and Richard Petty.
Well, I mean, Gordon, you needed to have stamina and skill at a certain level. But, you know, with Richard Petty, you had to just flat out be good. With Trevor Bayne, you're not even, you know... I mean, with Trevor, I mean, you know, it's not, it just isn't that big of a deal. It just isn't.
All right, your phone call is coming up next here, 877-876-7445. I don't know what they've done to cars these days, too, but I tell you, they gave him a lot of praise, man, yesterday, talking about how well he ran that race. 877-876-7445. Winning the Daytona 500 just isn't as difficult as it used to be as a driver. Anybody with 6 months' worth of training, because the cars are that advanced. We'll be back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Radio for Patriots, by Patriots, 877-876-7445.
Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Call screen.
That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number, 877-876-7445. And we have on the line here Jeff Dowder as we talk about the Daytona 500. It's a very interesting conversation we're having here because I don't know that much about automobile racing. But what you're saying, Jeff, with the victory of Trevor Bayne yesterday, you're saying it's not even a sport anymore?
I mean, look, you got a 20-year-old guy winning the Daytona 500. That's unheard of. That's unheard of. Because,
Well, I know it's unheard of because it was unheard of that a 25-year-old guy would win it.
No, but it's unheard of because of the fact that this is a traditionally been a really difficult sport, you know, to be a NASCAR driver, and now gradually more and more they have technological improvements. They've had improvements in the computers and remote control, autopilot, everything. So, you know, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not a sport no more. And if you got a sport that goes I don't know what you want to call it. You got a sport where your mom can do it, and you got a sport where, you know, I could do it. Do you call that a sport?
Or yeah, I call it. Well, I don't know if it's true that you can do it, that your mom can do it.
I'm a professor of mechanical physics. I'm telling you right now, you give me 6 months, I could sit in a NASCAR car, and the pit crew could be doing most of it by remote control, you know?
Well, what you said to me was you could lay down and take a nap, and they'd be able to race.
No, I did not say that. I said with a couple of...
Well, yes, you did. You said you could conceivably win the race.
No, I said with a couple of laps left, they could nurse you in. If you were slumped over, they could still nurse you in.
Are you telling me from the pits they can do 200 miles an hour and they can...
Hey, you know, with... I mean, if you've got a sport that's basically has the technology to do it with a joystick, you know...
Well, you're not telling me that that's what they're doing. You're saying they have the technology to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So how tough is it? Well, we can hire a 20-year-old driver because, after all, we can joystick it in. And, you know, he could be slumped over.
No, all right. I find that very almost impossible to believe unless you can tell me for a fact that that technology is right now applicable online and ready to go.
I'm telling you, Mr. Hendry, there's a reason a 20-year-old guy won a Daytona 500, and it isn't because we're growing drivers better. Are you kidding me? It's because there's technology coming out of it. It's technology that's just pouring out of your ears on how NASCAR did it.
877-876-7445. You know, that's a long way from, you know, a lot of your arguments here, Doc, have to do with, well, you know, are you kidding me? I mean, it stands to reason, all this stuff. Here's Scott in Greensboro, North Carolina. Scott, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Jeff Dowder.
Hey, I just like to tell that guy, there's been a lot of advancement in technology, but still, you've got to have raw talent to be out there and race.
Well, I mean, but how much, man? If you... You know, have the pit telling you, okay, go left, go right, go straight, you know, slow down. I mean, that's an advantage that David Pearson never had that. Richard Petty did not have that. Buddy Baker never had Fireball Robertshire didn't have that. All of a sudden, you got a guy there, Trevor Bayne, 20 years old, You know, I mean, I don't mean no disrespect or anything, but he's just out of his mom's house, and he's all, okay, Trevor, slow down, go fast, turn left, turn right. You know, okay, pit here. He didn't even know how to get to the winner's circle. He didn't know how, or not winner's circle, but what do they call it?
Pit row?
Yeah.
No, he knew how to get to pit row.
Or, yeah, the winner thing.
He's been racing his whole life.
Well, when you say he's been racing his whole life, what did he, when he was 10, what was he racing? Tricycles? Probably.
He was probably, what was he?
They used to race with him.
Go-karts. Go-kart. Those things go 50 miles an hour.
Yeah. 50 miles an hour. Big deal.
When you're 10?
Some of them go 120 miles an hour.
A go-kart when you're 10 years old, 120 miles an hour? I don't think so. I don't think
so.
They're not going to let no kid. They're not going to let no kid drive something like that. Don't you think, though, if you, Scott, you're from North Carolina, that's like the home of NASCAR. Don't you think you, okay, don't you think you, they could put you in a car, and if you passed out from the fear or whatever happened, they'd be able to nurse it back in?
Absolutely not. I mean, they're advanced, but they're not advanced that much.
They couldn't take control of the car? Well, but you know they got the technology to do that.
You know, you keep saying they got the technology. That's one thing. It's another thing to actually have it applied. In other words, it's another thing to have it in the car.
Well, I'm not convinced they don't have it in the car. You're telling me, sir, that if you passed out at the wheel...
What is this passing out at the wheel thing, man? You're assuming that drivers are going to be going so fast they're scared and they pass out.
Yeah.
Absolutely
and that's
not.
When,
I mean, I've been raised around racing. You know, my daddy races. My uncle races. They all race cars. I mean, they've got technology a whole lot better than they used to 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. But they do not have that good of technology right now. If they did, why wouldn't they have it in cars out on the road?
Well, they won't have it in cars on the road because the NASCAR guys got to test it out and make it good before they do that, you know?
But they don't test them out like that.
You can't... Don't tell me what your dad's name is, because does your dad and your uncle drive NASCAR?
They drive Ace Speedway. It used to be a NASCAR track, but last year it's unaffiliated.
Well, I mean, what is it, like Demolition Derby?
No, it ain't Demolition Derby.
No,
they're doing racing.
Not. Doing Figure 8? Is it Figure 8?
No, it ain't Figure 8.
No,
hey, listen, Scott, thanks for your...
Thank
you. Regular circle. Thank you very much, Scott. 877-876-PHIL. Has the racing gotten to the point now where you don't need to be all that good? It's the technology is that advanced. A 20-year-old young man won the Daytona 500. 877-876-7445. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Are you kidding me? I could slump sideways.
Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. You have the right to do anything you want. We're talking with Professor Jeff Dowder here about NASCAR racing and the fact that the Daytona 500 was won by a 20-year-old driver. It's quite an achievement. And that young man was at the end of the race, their final few laps, was second or third. Okay.
Yeah, and again, you know, a rookie, and it just so happens that he needed to have a top five finish, or he wasn't going to have no sponsorship for the second half of the season. I mean, see, there's just too much there, man. And
what do you mean there's too much there? Look. Here's a guy that wasn't even going to win the race had that David Reagan guy not taken that lane change, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he wasn't even going to win the race.
What are you talking about?
The guy that was leading the race got his ass... He was black flagged when they restarted. I don't know how many laps they had left. Four laps, three laps. He restarted the race, and he changed lanes before they went across the start line.
What's that got to do with Bain?
When that dude got black flagged, Bain... was moved up to first because he was in second.
Okay, well, that's another example of it.
What?
Of the technology.
That's not technology. That's not technology at all. It's that the other driver made a mistake. David Reagan, what did I say? Yeah, David Reagan.
What about him?
I already told you, man. David Reagan, this dude, he got his ass black flagged because of that lane change, and the next thing you know, he's out, and here comes Trevor Bayne.
Well, and again, that proves the technology, because Trevor Bayne would not even have had been in the position he was in. I'm not saying he's not a good driver, but we'll never know, because he won't have to be as good as David Pearson, won't have to be no as good as A.J. Foyt, won't have to be no good as Cale Yarborough. And A.J. Foyt, I mean, he was more of an IndyCar guy.
Yeah, and meaning what?
Well, I mean, that's how good he was, you know.
All right. 877-876-7445. I don't even think you know what I'm talking about here, man, because I'm talking about something totally different. Here is Trish in Flagstaff, Arizona. Trish, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Jeff Dowder.
Well, hello.
Hello, ma'am.
Sir, I'm sorry. I can't even remember your name, but I really don't.
Oh, my name's Jeff Dowder. It's Jeff
Dowder. I'm sorry?
Jeff Dowder.
Jeff Downer or Doucher? D-O-U-T-T-E-R?
Dowder. D-O-W-D as in, D as in what?
David.
D as in David, E-R, yeah.
Okay, well, I, no disrespect, sir, but, I don't think you have any idea as to what you're talking about. This gentleman won a race.
Yeah.
He won
right.
it with his driving ability. And
you can't really say gentleman. He's not even old enough to vote, you know. Or
well,
not vote, but drink.
Well,
you can call him a gentleman.
His driving ability, but as the circumstances happened, is how he won it. And yes, he is a rookie. So we have just this one race, just because it was a Daytona 500, doesn't mean that he is going to be at the bottom of the last one to complete the races in the future. You don't have any idea what's going on. You've never run a race.
Yeah,
but you
do.
Don't even know.
Are you telling me that, do you think it's just, you know, he's 20 years old and the next earliest was 25, and that happened in the last 10 years, okay?
It doesn't
You're
matter
not telling
how old
me.
You are. You know
yeah,
what
it does, in my opinion.
No, it does.
What?
In your opinion, I have an opinion, too. We all have
okay.
one. But
okay. Yeah, but you know what they say about opinions. Opinions
yes.
are just like
okay. You don't have to finish that. We know what
I'm
you mean.
I'm not going to say anything. We're all
not you,
seen.
But I was talking.
Oh God!
No kidding.
What?
Oh God! I tell you. Anyway, let me tell you something, sir. I'm 55 years old, and I have done some drag racing in my time, and that is a straight course. Nobody has to tell you anything. You just drive, and you just do it yourself.
What?
But,
no, but drag racing takes more than
chances are, things happen.
No, you don't
things
know.
Things happen. So unless you have been behind a wheel and done in any kind of racing, you don't have any room to talk or any ability to sit there on the radio and spout you're not for knowledge.
That's like saying, because I'm not a fireman, I don't have no right to talk about house fires. That's ridiculous. Of course I do. And
no, you don't.
I'm saying, yeah, if I'm not a fireman, I can't talk about fires? You forget it. You're way... And another thing, I've gone 150 miles an hour going between L.A. and San Diego on a lot of runs down there. Also, If you don't know, drag racing, all you got to do is pop the clutch. What do you know about it? You know.
A minute ago, you said it didn't. She said it didn't take anything, and you said it did.
Pop the clutch.
Pop the clutch.
Okay.
Shit that baby. You
I'm not sure you guys.
You've missed it and you've lost it.
you don't even know what you're talking about. You're drinking your dinner, but
Hey! Come on. Anyway, Trish, thank you for your call. Our number 877-876. Phil, here is Bruce in Atlanta. Go ahead, Bruce. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil. How are you doing tonight?
I agree. I'm good. I just want to say one thing. I agree that drag racing is not just... You got to know how to run a dragster.
Of course you do.
All right. But it isn't just popping the clutch. Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, Phil, I appreciate you taking my call tonight. I'm really wondering if this guy is truly an engineer and an educator. Jeff, you know, first of all, you were a little...
Because I don't agree with a lot of the people that are making opinions doesn't mean that I'm not an educator. I mean, you heard that lady. She goes, you don't know what you're talking about. And she don't even know what popping the clutch is.
Okay, well, that was Trish. This is Bruce now, first of all. Secondly, you really don't have an idea of what these guys go through when they're racing. You said their stamina it doesn't have to be where it used to be. Not true. These guys lose about 10 to 15 pounds in just water from racing 500 miles. 500 miles would take a toll on anybody's body. You better be in tip-top shape to do it. Matter of fact, Jimmy Johnson now is setting the example for that. Tony Stewart this past season has lost 10 to 15 pounds. And you look at those guys that are racing, I don't see one of them that are overweight in their fire suit.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about keeping yourself trim, okay, what's that got to do with what we're saying? We're talking about, you know, having the skill to...
Let's go back to the technology.
I mean, if this is the Jack LaLanne show, we can talk about how trim... You know, but I don't want to do that.
No, we're not. The gentleman is saying that these guys are undergoing and enduring a physical. It's an endurance. You know.
Right.
Well, I mean,
exactly.
Okay, water weight. Yeah, water weight.
And it's nothing that we could train for in 6 months to go out there and do it. First of all, these guys.
I mean, give me a canteen of water. I won't lose so much water weight.
First of all, these guys have come up as younger kids. You know, in their teenage years. Racing on dirt tracks. They know how to maneuver a car when it starts to slide. They know how to press that accelerator when they need to. They know how to back off when they need to. I tell you what,
they're telling them how to do that from the pit. They're already radioing them the information that they need.
You said that you could, because of today's technology, you could get behind the wheel and do this in 6 months. I'm going to tell you what, you get behind that wheel doing 195 miles an hour, and somebody bump thrashed you down that back stretch of Daytona, you're going to soil your bridges because there's no way. You make one wrong move, buddy, I'm going to tell you what, you will be spinning around and around about four or five times.
That's when they can They can take over from the pits by adjusting the spoiler, and the spoiler will make the guy back off or get or snug him right up.
Adjusting the spoiler.
They
could do that, but they don't do that now. That's not the technology. That's not the
NASCAR.
I mean,
you don't know.
They do it, if you want to go to Mamby Pamby Land on this thing, we can
get
a racetrack up on the moon and race around up there. But that's not the case.
What?
I mean, they don't
the moon, do man.
They
how are you going to get the crews up there? I don't understand the moon comment.
He's talking about how you're fantasizing here, Jeff, and you've got this whole thing about how, hey, why don't we control the spoiler? That way we can, you know, control the drafting so the cars don't have to do anything.
I'm telling you right now, and this man just admitted to me, they had a technology. I personally think that whole drafting thing is about as gay-looking, you know, and I don't know what they're trying to do when they're snugging, you know, let me snug up in there.
What?
Well, I just think it looks ridiculous.
Here's what it looks like, man. It's a piece of racing. It's a strategy.
That's my point, Phil. This guy has no idea what he's talking about. Because if you don't draft a Daytona, you are left so far behind the pack that they will lap you within 20 laps. I've been to Daytona. I've seen the race live myself. And I know for a fact that's what happens. And
are you telling me that if you were a driver at Daytona,
really,
you'd want a guy snug up in there?
I wouldn't. What a dumb thing to say, Jeff. I know you're a fan out there. You want to be a fan. You want to root for these guys. But
I do.
You really don't have a clue, man. I'm trying to tell you guys,
you're telling me that if you were a driver, you'd want a guy nosing it right up in there. God, man.
What difference does that make?
Push me on. Absolutely.
They got something else in mind.
You know what, man? Grow up.
What? Mr. Henry,
No, grow up, all right? This is a technique they use in racing now, and they can use in NASCAR. They may not be able to use it so much in the open wheel, but they use it to great effect, and you're sitting there talking about how gay it looks. What does that make you?
He thinks that this rookie was not good enough to win this race. Well, let me tell you,
the best driver ever in NASCAR. It took him just about his whole career before he won that race. And Dale
that's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about. Because
forever.
Yeah, so, that's right. Back when Dale Sr. was a good driver, but this guy, that proves my point. That proves Dale Sr. was a great driver. This kid, he gets out of his out of a playpen, and he's the king. Man, I don't get it.
Yeah, I know you don't get it. That's what. Thank you very much.
You know,
so I got to take a break, but I have a very good call,
Dale
Bruce.
Dale Sr. could have won that race a lot of times, Jeff, but he didn't because of luck. He did not have luck
All
on
right.
his side, and this kid did.
Very good, Bruce. Thanks for your call. 877-876-7445. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show as we talk with Jeff Dowder, professor of mechanical physics at Caltech. Did Trevor Bayne, was he really good enough to win the Daytona 500, or is he just a young man at a time in racing where the technology is so good? You don't have to be a good driver. That's the question that he's asking, and, of course, you know the opinion of myself and my callers. 877-876-7445, Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
We got Professor Jeff Dowder here with us as we talk in our final segment about the Daytona 500 and the winner, Trevor Bayne. And I just don't want to, I know what your opinion is, Jeff, I don't want to take anything away from this young man. It was a great race. He was a very humble winner, very skillful win, held off that one driver, whoever it was, Edwards, there at the end to win the race. And I think he should be given that. Now, you were talking, we'll get to a call about collision alarms. I tell you what, let's get to the calls.
Well, collision alarm.
Hold on. I want to get to the call first, then we'll talk about what you think a collision alarm is supposed to do. Here is Charlie in Miami. Go ahead, Charlie. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, how you doing? I just have to disagree with the professor 100%. It takes a driver to win a race. It takes a team and a crew.
It used to, yeah.
The driver can drive. Trevor Bayne can drive. He's been driving since he was a kid, stepping up from go-karts to midgets all the way up to get to NASCAR. It takes a driver. I think you're confusing Formula One technology with NASCAR technology. There is no wing adjustment. There's no computers. There's nothing in those cars but safety equipment. That's where NASCAR puts their technology at, is in safety and keeping the cars even. Formula One has traction control, launch control. They can adjust the wings while they're driving the car. NASCAR cannot.
Well, they got spoilers on the cars that in the cars they drive on the track at the, you know, the ones that go in a circle.
The ones that go in a circle?
Is that what IndyCars is a totally different. NASCAR has fixed wings.
NASCAR has fixed wings.
They're not adjustable. NASCAR has fixed wings, not adjustable wings. They're fixed wings. They are set at one position, and that's the way they're set the whole time. NASCAR mandates carburetors, restrictor plates. Everything is mandated by NASCAR to be equal on every car. Nobody can have a different car. Their measurements, their cars are measured before and after the race. Everything is measured.
With that.
It has to be
are you
equal.
Telling me
it takes
they have
a driver to win the race.
They got radios in the car, and on the radio, they're telling the guy how to drive.
They're not telling them how to drive. All the spotters doing is telling them you have a car high, you got to have a car low. That's all he's telling him. A car high and a car low. Because he doesn't have mirrors to look. He doesn't have mirrors to see. He's just telling them you have a car high, you have a car low.
Go faster, they'll say.
How do you know that?
It stands to reason. They're
wide open. They do not let off that gas. They're wide open all the way around.
There are areas where they could go faster, but they lay off of it because they're not sure whether the kid can handle it.
They lay off of it to conserve fuel
if they think they're not going to make it to the end and they don't want a pit stop. So they come to confuse, hold back, and save fuel. So at the end, we'll be there when everybody else runs out.
You're right about that. But also, in case the kid gets scared.
There's no scared. The kid is not going to get scared. If he was going to get scared, he wouldn't be in that car. He wouldn't be in that car. I've driven at Daytona. I'm an SCCA member. I'm a road racer. I've driven at Daytona.
Okay.
And
you're
that banking in Daytona is scary. It is scary.
You're in a road race course. You don't go as fast on a road race course as they do on the circle one.
What is it with circle one? You know, you're telling me that you are a NASCAR fan and going in a circle. You mean a NASCAR oval track?
Yeah.
Okay, then say it.
I'm saying as best as I can that kid Trevor Bayne, the technology is too advanced. You can't tell me that a 20-year-old guy wasn't getting big-time help, you know, from probably...
The cars are equal all the way around. If it was so easy, Jeff Gordon would win every single one. Tony Stewart's a great driver. He drives everything. He drives Indy. He drives off-road. Right. He drives midgets. He drives everything and wins in everything. He has never won the Daytona 500.
It takes skill and a little bit of luck.
What?
Skill and a little bit of luck. Trevor Bayne
made
no mistake.
If Jeff Gordon is a great driver, then how come Jeff Gordon ain't won if everything's equal? See, I just made my point.
I didn't. What was your point?
Trevor Bayne made no mistakes. That's why he won the race. He made no mistakes. He was in the right place at the right time. He didn't make no mistakes. No mistakes. That's what wins the race.
He made one mistake. He let me see the race. And as long as I've seen it, I will be carrying the message far and wide.
You're going to be carrying what message far and wide? That the kid wasn't good enough? I think this is a very good call from Charlie, who has the practical experience.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, he's 20 years old. All of a sudden, he's what? He's the world beater? I mean, where did he get his skill? And you just said Jeff Gordon would win it, but all the cars are equal, so how come Jeff Gordon don't win it? I'll tell you why. Because they don't give him enough good, you know, instructor, you know, advice.
What? Jeff Gordon needs advice?
Brother,
he needs advice on how to...
A borrowed car on an old team that has no funding. And you're going to tell me the kid didn't drive and to win that race?
Yeah, that's true. That's the Wood Brothers.
Brother.
They had no
they
money.
Had
they were
a
part-time.
Car. They borrowed that car from Jack Roush.
That was a part-time team, you know.
Well, yeah, but they also borrowed the radio equipment and the computers, too.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Charlie, for your call. I appreciate it. 877-876-7445. Ray in Buffalo. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, as far as your guest is concerned, I think you better start watching their speed racer cartoons. Well, with a NASCAR team, with a NASCAR driver, it's equipment driver team. The kid knew what he was doing. He did everything correct. As far as his father's concerned, like the other car said, it's high, low. Right? He can't see around him. That's what the spotter's there for. Now,
what about the collision alarms? What about collision alarms that they have? It goes, you know, it makes the beep, beep, beep.
There's no collision alarms in a NASCAR car.
Oh, are you kidding me, man? If you get too close, it goes,
The only collision prevention they have is the spotter. The spotter can tell them if there's a guy getting loosened behind in front of him, he'll say, go high. If he's up high when he
says, the guy's too loose behind him, well... Okay, the collision alarm, they may not have had it at Daytona, but I think they've had it at other races. The guy's going, you're going to hit the wall, you're going to go,
Phil.
And he goes, I know already.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
But I think ultimately collective bargaining from a...
There's nothing in this world that would stop a mother.
The greatest president in history, according to the American people, with their limited...
Ultimately collective bargaining from a federal level...
Thank you to those fat, lazy veterans.
Things are bad.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show. And, you know, this is a show where we create radio for patriots by patriots. Our patriot line is 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL. And let me just amp back up the assistant pro here, man. There it is.
Yeah.
In case you want to jump on our Patriot line tonight and discuss anything we've been discussing or anything that we haven't discussed that should be discussed, doctors hand out phony excuse letters. We're going to get to that. to protesters in Wisconsin. An unfortunate billboard gets pulled for a reference to Jonestown, and a Marine's mom gets fired for taking a call from her son overseas. She didn't get fired. I believe she got suspended. For taking a call from her son overseas. And we're going to talk about all of that stuff here. It is our news hour, and along with me in every news hour is Bud Dickman. Bud?
How you doing?
And Robert Leonard.
Yeah.
And we will talk about a number of things, starting with just an update. The earthquake in New Zealand, we must talk about this because it was a devastating event, and it has taken lives. It was in Christchurch, New Zealand. Christchurch, New Zealand is the capital of the country of New Zealand. You may ask yourself why such an unusual name, or perhaps a name you haven't heard that much. You know that New Zealand was a country, as far as the European settlers go, that was populated originally by missionaries, and so much of the naming of towns and of monuments and so forth reflected more of a European, dare I say, a religious rooting there in the early settlers. The I don't know. I'm probably talking too much here, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what you mean by any of that stuff.
I'm just saying that the people that got there, the white people, okay, the Europeans.
Yeah, the ones that run the show.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. They do. They named a lot of stuff like that.
What's a Maori? That's a guy from China.
No, the Maori are the natives. What do you mean a guy from China?
That was a guy in China. No, that's Mao.
Mao. He's talking about Maori.
What are that?
Those are the natives of New Zealand. As a matter of fact, I had a friend whose parents' family were missionaries in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And as God is my witness, we would, every 4th of July, go to their house. This wasn't the missionary's house, but this was a friend of, actually a friend of Maria's. And anyway, make a long story short, we would go to their house because their missionary relatives taught them how to build, how to dig this pit, man. You know?
Yeah, is that when he put a pig down there? Oh, you're kidding me.
Well, it wasn't exactly a pig. We put, but yeah, it was a pit. And we did it every 4th of July at their house, you know?
Did you eat the food out of there?
Yeah, and it was, I'm telling you, right now, it was fantastic. What you did was, I'm trying to remember how we did this, but I know that we started with a, how did we do? We had to dig this pit, and then we lined the pit with something, some kind of a cloth or something, and then we put in coal. Okay, and then we put in all of these chickens, you know.
What do you mean?
Chickens, man, you know, bunches of
like a fryer?
Well, a whole fryer. Yeah, we put in a whole bunch of these, man. We must have put in like 20 of them. And then a whole bunch of pork roasts. And we would the chicken, we'd lay that down, then we'd lay some of this cloth on it. And then we'd lay that down and lay some of this cloth on it. And if I'm getting this wrong, and then we put in the pork roasts. And then we laid more cloth on it, and somewhere along the line, these coals that we'd laid down, and I think we threw the coals in on top of it, too. Oh, then we watered the cloth that we laid down. It had to be wet.
What do you do? Like, lay it down throw, and spray a hose on it?
Yeah, just wet it with a hose. And then we put in the coals and lit all this stuff. Oh, I know what it was. We had to light the fire first. In the morning, we dug the pit. We would light the fire. And all of this heavy ash, okay, not ash, but coal, so it would be red hot, and then we'd cover the pit up.
I don't understand.
Okay, what do I got to do? Explain this all over again, man?
No, I understand.
All right, we dug the pit, and then we lit the coals.
Yeah.
And all right, but we had a lot of coals in there, and they're really, really hot. And then that's when we laid in all the chickens and all the pork. And excuse me, I was going to say I banged the microphone, but that's probably...
Yeah, I don't watch it.
Not the right thing to say. And anyway, we covered it up, and then we shoveled over the dirt, see?
And then what happened?
Then we would let that sit all day, okay? And, you know, it's a party. It's a 4th of July party, and it's my favorite time of year is the 4th of July party. There's just nothing better, man. There's nothing better when you got the beer and the margaritas going, and somebody's got a swimming pool going, and you got the music going, and you got yourself a party. I mean, it's 4th of July, okay? And throw in some fireworks. Next thing you know, you've burned down some houses. So anyway...
You kidding me?
Yes, I'm kidding. So anyway, by about 8 o'clock at night, somebody goes, well, better dig the pit up. And...
Man, that's dangerous.
I'm joking, man. We're not that hammered. No, by about 8 o'clock at night, he goes, okay. So we pull the pit up, And I'm telling you, man, it's fantastic. It's as tender as a mother's heart, the chicken and the pork. Juicy, delicious.
That's from cooking it down in the dirt and everything?
Yes, from cooking it down in the dirt. Now, do you realize I was going to talk about the earthquake, and here I am talking about a beach luau?
Oh, man, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? I was supposed to talk about an earthquake. Why don't you guys keep me on point? All right, so having talked about a luau, this may be New Zealand's darkest day. A powerful earthquake ripped through Christchurch, New Zealand on Tuesday afternoon, killing 65 people as it toppled buildings, buckled roads, and damaged cathedrals. Frantic rescuers scrambled to reach those trapped in the rubble. After the 6.3 magnitude earthquake struck, scores of dazed and bleeding residents wandered the streets strewn with debris and chunks of concrete. Good Lord. A woman atop a pile of rubble tearfully pleaded to the crowd to help her. They were coming for you, they're coming for you, a bystander said. The quake, which struck during the city's lunchtime rush, was followed by a series of aftershocks. During a visit to Christchurch, New Zealand, Prime Minister John Key said the priority was to rescue people trapped in buildings. Oh, you know what? That's not the capital. Auckland is the capital. Forgive me. Quakes, police and rescue crews had been dispatched from all over the country to help. The Prime Minister said this is heartbreaking. This may be New Zealand's darkest day. The quake ripped the facade off of the iconic Christchurch Cathedral. At the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament, piles of stone sat atop crushed chairs on the floor as a light shone through the collapsed tower above the sanctuary. Laura Campbell said she was at work at the bottom of a six-story building when the earthquake struck. She described seeing windows blowing out, bricks falling down, people screaming the whole nine yards, as she put it. It was bloody serious, she said. The New Zealand Herald reported that the quake knocked out phone lines, including the city's emergency 111 service. The Tembler cracked roads. Yes, 111, bud, not 911.
Oh.
The Tembler cracked roads and broke water mains, flooded several streets. About 80% of the city lost power. The nation's news network, TVNZ, reported that witness Philip Gragan said he was attending a joint U.S.-New Zealand conference when the earthquake struck. I'm seeing a lot of damage in buildings. I've seen one collapsed bridge. There's a lot of water from broken water mains. And the story goes on, folks, and you can well imagine here in Los Angeles, we've had, in my lifetime, two 6.6 earthquakes. We had a 6.6, the Northridge quake, and the Sylmar quake was a 6.6. Now, Northridge was in the valley, the Northridge quake. Sylmar, which I think they might have misnamed the Sylmar quake because it's actually called the San Fernando Valley quake. That, too, was a valley-centered quake, but the Sylmar quake, I think, got named because there was a lot of damage up there. And that quake in 71 took 60-plus lives. I think the same of the Northridge quake. And we had freeways that collapsed. And we had a lot of things that happened. Here is a 6.3. There's a lot of structural damage. These are older buildings. I don't know what the earthquake code is in New Zealand.
I'll find out, Bud. Why don't you do that?
Why don't you do it?
Because I'm telling you to do it.
You do it, Bud.
Well, how come he tells me?
I'm telling you and he's telling you, go find out what the earthquake code is for New Zealand. Do it fast. Now, what is in New Zealand's history, okay, what is the next strongest quake? Well, one of the guys working for New Zealand's center that tracks these things said that southern New Zealand has been hit by a series of quakes since September when the area was shaken by a 7.1 magnitude Tembler that authorities said was the most damaging quake to hit the region since 1931. The earthquake struck in the pre-dawn hours of September the 4th. Authorities said the deserted streets at the time likely kept injuries to a minimum. There were no deaths from that quake. A 7.1.
No deaths from a 7.1, and they got 60 people from a 6.3.
Yeah. So that goes to show you that it is not necessarily the strength of the quake. It's the location of the people. It's the strength of the structures that are affected. You could have a 7.1 earthquake in the middle of the desert, man. If there's no buildings, no people, no one's going to die. It's a 7.1 earthquake. And I read of an earthquake, and this is now this is getting way back. Northridge was a 6.7. 65 people died in the Northridge earthquake. Now, there was an earthquake that was an 8.0, but it happened in the 18th century.
What? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about an earthquake that laid flat the West, didn't lay flat, but an earthquake that hit the West Coast of the United States. It was a tsunami, I think, that really got it. And this was an earthquake that took place in the Pacific, underwater, an 8.0. And the reason why we know that this happened is because of the anecdotal information that came down from that those days. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
In other words, Native American lore, any settlers, and there were very few, and we're talking the 18th century in northwest United States, so who was there? Mostly British settlers, maybe, a fort, a lot of Native Americans, and the Japanese, because the tsunami from that 8.0 quake hit the Japanese coast, and there is local native lore from the 18th century about these gigantic waves and flattening of villages and things like that. And they also have a sort of, I guess what you would call it, a geologic record, too. There's a certain geologic record along the coast of California showing strata, the soil strata and differences. I don't know how they do it, but that's what they say. Thank you.
That got nothing to do with the New Zealand people.
No, but I was just talking about big earthquakes. All right. The New Zealand Code is a performance-based code. Rather than telling people exactly how to build, it sets out objectives to be achieved. For example, one of the objectives is to safeguard people from illness or injury which could result from external moisture entering the building. Therefore, you need to ensure that buildings are weather-tight. The code does not prescribe construction methods, but gives guidance on how a building and its components must perform, as opposed to how the building must be designed and constructed. That's the New Zealand Building Code. How does that help you when there's an earthquake? You decide, class. We'll be back right after this commercial message. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-871-7445. And coming up, in case that doesn't thrill your thriller, baby, Americans rank the greatest U.S. presidents, and boy, does it piss off Chris Matthews.
Radio.
And is your callous, unemotional kid a
song? Hi, Patriots. It's the Phil right. Hendry Show. Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Radio for Patriots by Patriots, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Now, before we get to the greatest or the least greatest presidents in the history of the world and these other things, we should get to what's happening in the Middle East. This is the latest. Now it's Libya. Libya was coming unglued last night. Muammar Gaddafi's son went on the radio and said that Libya will fight to its to the last bullet. And I went on Twitter and jokingly said, what is Libya, you and your dad? Nobody else laughed, but
that is funny.
Thank you. But Libya is a fascinating. And then the op-ed in the L.A. Times. Hey, L.A. Times, you know, we've had our differences. You can't go back now and say, oh, well, U.S. policy in the Middle East, irrelevant and superfluous. Oh, really?
Well, they're talking about that.
That's the L.A. Times. This is the revisionism, folks, here on Patriot Radio for Patriots by Patriots. This is the kind of revisionism that we're talking about. See, we're going from a world where the U.S. policy in the Middle East was destructive, it was criminal, it was genocidal, it was based upon a lie, it overturned and wrecked lives, it murdered millions, it's this and that, and all that other horse dung that they trot out when they are propagandizing a news story or a news event to criminalize the United States. They will come out with all of that stuff, as they did. Well, any country that is guilty of the things you accuse the United States of being guilty of, L.A. Times, you can't turn around now and say, but, you know, their policy in the Middle East, irrelevant and superfluous, meaning it had no impact at all, is what you're saying.
No, they're saying that the good, there is no good.
No, they're not, man. No, they're not.
Why do you say that?
I'll tell you why I'm saying it. If you're saying that the U.S. policy in the Middle East was irrelevant, had nothing whatsoever to do, they did it without us, is the way they're saying. They did it without us. That's a long way from saying we were criminals and, boy, that war in Iraq, what a horrible thing. That's a long way, man. Now what they're now they're on defense. Now they're saying, no, Phil Hendry, don't you dare say that the there's linkage between the United States knocking out Saddam Hussein and setting up a democracy in Iraq. No, no, you can't say that. Why, if you say that and we accept that, why, that makes us all look like a bunch of horses' asses. Well, you know, get the point?
Yeah, but you're saying like what?
What did I just get done saying to you?
You're saying it that.
No, I want him to say it, not you, man.
All right, I'll say it. I'm saying, Robert, that the L.A. Times went out of its way, and a lot of other newspapers, to say that the U.S. policy in the Middle East, and we're talking about Iraq, was a destructive and a criminal and blah, 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 blah. You know. Now, what is it? It's not the Middle East having to overcome the destructive policies of the U.S. It's not the Middle East in spite of the destructive presence of the U.S. in the Middle East. It's not the people of the Middle East achieving, even though they had to contend with the U.S. meddling and interfering and empowering Israel. Oh, my God, the horror. No, none of that stuff. It's, oh, well, U.S. policy was superfluous and irrelevant, meaning that all this good stuff is happening despite America's good stuff. That's what that means. Meaning they would have done it, and they're doing it without us. So they have recharacterized America in the Middle East from being this horrific thing to having no impact at all. And actually what they're saying is America intended something very good for the Middle East, but they didn't need that stuff because they're getting it done themselves. Well, I'm here to tell you, you're wrong on every single one of those counts. You ain't never been right. L.A. Times, never. You're having to face the reality that the war in Iraq could very well have been a trigger or a spark for these democratic movements. You don't want to admit that because, you know, what happens if you admit that. Probably what's already happened. You got no credibility with anybody.
Now that's a good bet. Let's see. Now I understand.
Well, thank you. Meanwhile, deep cracks open in Muammar Gaddafi's makeup, in his regime Monday, with Libyan government officials at home and abroad resigning, Air Force pilots defecting, and a bloody crackdown on protest in the capital of Tripoli where cars and buildings were burned. Bloody crackdown. So the Air Force pilots are defecting. They have not used if this is the military busting down on people or these cops. Now, what is this?
I bet you it's like Gaddafi's got the SS or something.
The SS, I don't know. Are these cops, or is it a big difference, you know? It was like it's the military busting down? So the Air Force says no, it's just a bunch of guys that are defecting. The mercurial leader on Libyan state television for less than a minute early Tuesday to dispel rumors that he had fled, sitting in a car in front of what appeared to be his residence and holding an umbrella out of the passenger side door. He told an interviewer that he had wanted to go to the Capitol's Green Square to talk to his supporters, but the rain stopped him. I'm here to show that I'm in Tripoli and not in Venezuela. Don't believe those misleading dog stations, he said, referring to the media reports that he had left the country. Misleading dog stations.
Talk about Animal Planet?
I guess.
Yeah, probably Animal Planet, I think, reported that he'd gone.
Or maybe one of the dogs just did, you know, took over.
Could be.
Animal Planet. Anyway, pro-Qaddafi militia drove through Tripoli with loudspeakers and told people not to leave their homes, witnesses said, as security forces sought to keep the unrest that swept eastern parts of the country, leaving the second largest city of Benghazi in protesters' control from overwhelming the capital of 2 million people, the capital of Libya, which is, what the hell is it, man? I don't know. Tripoli, yeah. All right, we're going to come back with this because this is where it's at, man. This Libya and all of the horse dung. Libya and Wisconsin, these two places. And the latest also from Fat Ass, who says that, yeah, wow, man, Wisconsin looks just like Cairo, don't it? No, not at all. It's colder in Wisconsin. 877-876-7445, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Now, 877-876-PHIL.
That's 877-876-7445.
I don't want to go on and on about this LA Times, but this guy, Andrew Bakovic, he says that the ongoing upheaval in the Arab world has rendered a definitive judgment on U.S. policy over the last decade. Relying on their own resources, employing means of their own devising, the people of the Middle East intent on transforming that region have effectively consigned the entire war on terror to the category of strategic irrelevance. Let me explain something to you, Andrew. That's a far cry from saying the United States had a devastatingly negative impact. Now it's irrelevant. And he goes on to say that the U.S. actions in Iraq and Afghanistan have had mixed results at best. That's where you talk about equivocation. Mixed results. Oh, really? I mean, you guys, for years, it was just the worst travesty. It was a war crime. It was Bush should be impeached. And, oh, well, now it's mixed results. You're backpedaling. You guys and all of you slobs. I can't take it. I can't take the arrogance. Mixed results. Meanwhile, the cost incurred to prove painfully high in terms of treasure expended, lives lost, and moral authority squandered. Mixed results. Irrelevant. How do you know, sir, that the actions of the people in Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, elsewhere, Iran, were not inspired by the very actions of the U.S. military in Iraq? Listen to this. It now turns out those exertions were unnecessary. Unnecessary? Or, at the very least, superfluous. Now, do you know what those words mean in the context of what we're talking about? Now, we're no longer talking about a criminal regime, the criminal regime of George Bush, invading an innocent little country and violating international law. And, oh, my goodness gracious, I don't know where to begin on the horrors that were inflicted by the U.S. military. Now, all of a sudden, well, it was unnecessary. In other words, it would have been necessary had the people there not risen up. Or the very least, superfluous, meaning good, but not necessary. Actually, unnecessary and superfluous, that's the same thing, you dummy. For 9 years, the U.S. has been pushing on a door that opens outward. Are you loving that? Has been pushing on a door that opens outward. In other words, what was happening and what is happening now in the Middle East was going to happen anyway. Well, I got to tell you, it takes a mighty big pair to make that statement. Not only a big pair, it takes a really small brain. A big pair, a small brain, and, well, we'll get into that later.
A teeny, teeny.
Shut up. For a some writer for the whatever the hell, the L.A. Times, to come out and say, you know, it was going to happen anyway. And the U.S. has been pushing on a door that opens outward. You have not even addressed the likelihood that any of this stuff was going to happen had the U.S. not, on television no less, had United States Marines and tanks pulling down the statue of Saddam Hussein there in the square. I mean, that guy, one of the most feared and hated, the statue's going down. That's the U.S. military doing that. You telling me that had absolutely no effect? And then, and keep in mind, we're talking about people that are scared to death, living under a police state-type authority in countries like Iran, in countries like Syria, in Egypt, in Libya, in Tunisia, all those countries. Now they're looking at the U.S. military walking right through the front door and pulling down the statue, and then engaging in the most ghastly and horrific firefights in Fallujah and elsewhere through 04, and the Sunni Triangle. And then comes the surge, and then comes, by God, no one dare say it, the United States is batting the hatches down there in Iraq. And the people of the Middle East are looking at this, and their jaws are hitting the floor. Because we're talking about Saddam Hussein now. We're talking about Gaddafi. We're talking about some of the baddest cats, the baddest dudes that part of the world had ever seen. We're talking about Mubarak. These are guys, not so much in the case of Mubarak, but in the case of Anwar Sadat, these are guys that kicked the Europeans out. The Libyans, they kicked the U.S. Wheeler Air Force Base out of Libya when they took over from the king down there, whenever the hell that was. The Tunisians throwing out the French. The Iraqis kicking the British out. Same thing in Iran. Now comes the West Here comes the United States, or the return of the Europeans, basically. What do you guys think you're going to do, man? We already muscled your asses out of here, and look what we did to the Russians in Afghanistan, too. Boy, those Americans there in Afghanistan, they haven't got a prayer. What the hell you think you're going to do? Boom, baby. He ain't coming back, and not only that, he had about the most ignominious ending on television, or at least on a cellular phone, I've ever seen anybody have in my life. I mean, they just, see you later, Saddam. Blimp. They dropped the freaking trapdoor in his ass, didn't they?
Man, I have no dignity.
Well, like the guy deserved any. That's the end of that. Goodbye. And the two sons, goodbye. And the family, we don't care. And the surge, suddenly we're making friends. So what if we paid a few of them off? You know of any way of getting business done without paying people? When you find out, you let me know. Paying them. Damn right. So all of a sudden, something happens in Iraq that nobody thought could happen. Not even people in America. Not even people in the United States. Supposedly sophisticated and intelligence, and supposedly people with some guts, did not predict, did not want to have anything to do with, wouldn't have anything to do with, anything having to do with a military operation of the Middle East, long overdue, to take out Saddam Hussein and whoever the hell else we thought we should take out, to be perfectly honest with you. No, there's no way you can do that. You can't impose democracy. Those are a bunch of nomads, tribesmen. All of these so-called progressives and liberals who have the milk of human kindness running through their veins for the poor little tribes people of the Middle East, when the push comes to shove and they got to say something, they're just a bunch of dumbasses on camels, man. You can't teach them anything. Yeah. And so, what no American thought could happen, what no Arab was told could happen, what no Arab was even allowed to think could happen, because the almighty state, the almighty fascist state of Saddam and Ahmadinejad and of that Assad and of Mubarak and of Gaddafi and all the other scum, what they told their people would never happen in the lifetime of a million camels, or however the hell they put it. Oh, it happened all right. Big time. And you're telling me that that has no effect on the so-called Arab street? You're telling me that that has no effect on the so-called mindset of the people? When they're looking at a country, Iraq, they're looking at another country, Afghanistan, the people there are actually setting up, however shaky, the apparatus of democratic government, that they don't think to themselves, you know what, time's a waste, and how about we get cracking too? I'm sorry, I don't buy it. I make a better case for it than this jackball with the LA Times makes against it. And I'm not even breaking a sweat either. You must have worked overtime with this one, Mr. Whatever the hell your name is.
Bakovich. So now, Bathsheba.
Bathsheba? What the hell are you talking about, man? The author, Andrew J. Bakovich, is a professor of history and international relations at Boston University. His most recent book is Washington Rules, America's Path to Permanent War. In other words, this guy's a historian, like I'm a columnist for the L.A. Times. You can't, you know what, sir, you're no kind of a historian if you have a political agenda. You're not a historian. You're nobody. I'm not going to read your history of anything. You have not analyzed events properly, Andrew Bakovic. Get your ass back in the cubicle and write it again. Freaking clown. All right, I got to get off the Middle East then, man.
Oh, you're going to talk about Gaddafi and everything.
I ain't talking no more about Gaddafi. Screw it. We'll get back to Gaddafi tomorrow night, okay? We haven't talked enough here. We haven't jaw-jacked Wisconsin. That's right, Wisconsin, man. And Governor Walker warns of deeper debt if Wisconsin lawmakers don't get the budget deal they want. In an interview on WKOW television, Governor Walker explains why he's taking such a tough stance with the unions.
This is about the fact that we have a $3.6 billion deficit going into this next budget. For us to tackle, that means we're going to have to rein in government spending, not only at the state level, but for local governments. I mean, local governments see the size of the cuts that they're going to get, just like governors in New York and California and others across the country have done. The difference here in Wisconsin is we're going to give them the tools with this bill to be able to balance their budget.
Governor Walker says he didn't expect Wisconsin to be the center of the national debate on union fights.
I thought, by and large, there would be a fair amount of attention focused on this. I had no idea the national attention. And increasingly, we saw over the weekend a lot of people coming in from other states. The people who are here from Wisconsin have every right to be heard. People from other states, that's a whole other matter. I know as a former elected official at the county level, you can't do it unless you tackle collective bargaining. The rights remain. Workers are still protected in the state. But collective bargaining is the key. Otherwise, the alternative I saw over the years at the local government level is you're forced into layoffs, and that's just unacceptable.
All right, the Reverend Jesse Jackson spoke with McIver Institute, a conservative-leaning think tank, over the weekend about why he's joining in the protest.
We have to show support that came to inspire workers, to stand with workers, because all around the country we see now 59 million Americans now have no health insurance. Insurance fees are still rising. 49 million Americans are in poverty. 44 million are on food stamps. We give the wealthiest Americans a tax cut at Christmas time and not lay off public workers. It's not right. The workers ought to fight back, and they are fighting back, and they're going to win.
Reverend Jesse Jackson compares the protests in Wisconsin to those in Cairo.
Well, it's the same spirit. I mean, it's a massive, non-violent, disciplined response.
Non-violent.
To economic insecurity.
Oh, sure, they may grab someone's breasts, but...
A non-violent, disciplined struggle fighting tyranny. But it was about economic security and economic justice. Here, it's the same way.
On NBC's Meet the Press yesterday, CNBC host Rick Santelli makes a comparison between the 9/11 terrorist attacks and collective bargaining's effect on budgets. Wow.
But I think ultimately collective bargaining from a level, these are big issues.
No,
these costs need to be put under control.
It's
if the
racist.
Country is ever attacked like it was in 9/11,
all
respond with a sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on balance sheets throughout the country is the same type of attack.
It's a biohazard.
You know something, Mr. Santelli, you're speaking the language, but you're just on the other side of the fight. And what's happened in our country is people haven't gotten this. This is the essential lesson. Sometimes one thing works, and sometimes the other thing works. And if all it is about one thing working all the time, man, you're in big trouble. So here it is. 52 years that you've had the rights to collectively bargain, 52 years of public union, a public employee union, 52 years of, yes, of a good life for union members in Wisconsin. Yes, and I don't for a minute begrudge you any of it. And now your country is asking, or your state at least, is asking for something from you. Now your state is asking for something from you. You want the right to negotiate? Well, yeah, but this is not the union negotiation thing. This is a governor with a majority in both houses and an electorate behind him. That's not the same thing as your collective. There's the governor just saying, I ain't going to do it. You know, you people ought to just show a little more fortitude. You know, in 4 years, you can throw his ass out of there. You can elect a whole new legislature. You can change the political face of Wisconsin yet again. So why don't you butch up? What a bunch of whiners. 52 years you said you had this, that. How about doing something for your state now, for your state? How about trying something different and giving a little something back and giving a little bit of help? And you want to know something? You'll be able to say, all right, we did what he asked. We did what he asked. We did it. And if it doesn't work out, man, you won't have to, I don't think you'll have to lift a finger when it comes time to replace Walker. He'll probably just blow right out of the Capitol like a piece of trash. Just a good wind blows up and he's gone. Why don't you have the guts to do that? And why don't you have the public-mindedness and the care and concern for your community to do that? Why don't you shut up? Why don't you get your elected people back into the Capitol? Why don't you grow the hell up? Why don't you face facts? Why don't you accept the judgment of the people of Wisconsin and be, a little, like I said, community-minded? And if things don't work out, you can at least say we did what the state asked us to do. We were happy to do it. We're not going to stand in the way if the majority of the voters want this or that. And then you can throw Walker out of there, man, like he's a light piece of ash out of the fireplace. I'm serious. But you're not being encouraged to do that. You're listening to these opportunists like Moore, Michael Moore, who is a fat ass sitting up there in Wisconsin and wants to get a couple of hundred feet for a new documentary he's doing called My Ass Now in Wisconsin. That's just the working title. Or Jesse, who's a nice man. We interviewed Jesse Jackson. He's a sweet guy, but he's always going to just sort of mouth the same thing because, you know, they just got him out of bed and they said, Jesse, we got to get you up to Wisconsin. Well, what's going on up there? It doesn't matter. Just go up and say the usual stuff. It's about workers. It's about, all right, that's done. Get him back in the car. So he sort of just pops from one thing to the next. Nancy Pelosi, who says, I stand in solidarity. Has she been to Wisconsin? Of course not. You know why? Because that'd be the end. Political death for her. It'd be over, man. She'd have no credibility at all. So I would say respectfully, I don't know if nobody can listen to me, but if there's anybody in Wisconsin, Liz, you could say the following thing. Just why don't you guys bring everybody back, acknowledge that this is something that the governor who was elected and the majority, that they want this, do it. And if it blows up in their faces, and you can even root for it blowing up in their faces, then you are back, and there's not much they're going to tell you can't have. A mom gets suspended for taking a call from her Marine son in Afghanistan. We're going to get into it here in just a moment here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. No, he didn't say.
It's pretty gay.
He didn't say that. He just said, Mom, it's your son. I love you. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show at 877-876-PHIL.
Hi, Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Sorry about that?
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean?
Fred, if you turn the sound up a bit, you'd be funny, though.
I don't know. Turn the sound up on what?
Craig Ferguson.
Yeah, if you turn the sound up on Craig Ferguson, well, why? It's not funny?
It ain't funny with the sound down.
No, it ain't funny with the sound. Tell me a show that's funny with the sound down.
Like, Letterman's funny with the sound down, just the face he does.
Oh, get out of here. Craig Ferguson ain't funny with the sound turned off. He's not funny with the sound turned up.
That's not fair, man.
I'm just joking. You're right. That was bad. All right. A Tennessee woman has rewritten office policy and apologized to a military mom employee after suspending her for taking a cell phone call at work from her son in Afghanistan where he's stationed as a Marine. How do you like the gall of that woman? She took a phone call from her son calling from Afghanistan, who is a Marine, and it's against company policy. That's right. Crane Interiors of Woodbury suspended Teresa Danford for 3 days after she answered a call last Monday from Lance Corporal Mark Ryan. He's been in Afghanistan for 7 months. He only gets access to a satellite phone once a month. Citing the use of phones at the factory as a safety issue, I can understand that. Crane Interiors, which makes Marine upholstery, Marine as in boats, not our United States Marines, not only suspended Danford, but warned her that a repeat offense would result in termination. She was repeatedly aware of the policy, arguing, however, the company knew of her son's limited access to a phone. Crane Interiors, now here's the part that bugs me. They backtracked after the ensuing public outrage, issuing an apology. Crane Interiors regrets the incident and has not only reinstated Danford's pay, but they instituted a special policy allowing employees to take calls from military personnel serving overseas, human resources manager Larry Jackass said. Here is Teresa Danford talking to ABC News about why she had to take... You don't have to explain this, Miss Danford, but I guess ABC couldn't figure it out.
There is nothing in this world that would stop a mother from answering a phone call from her son. And what if it were not my son? What if he had been hurt? What if someone were trying to contact me?
You don't have to explain that to most human beings, Miss Danford. Now, here's the part that I don't like. I understand a company having a policy. I get it. I understand that it's a safety hazard. I get that. Where I begin to crack a little bit is when she said it was my son. He's a Marine in Afghanistan. And they said, we don't care if you do it again. You're going to this and that. Now, yes, that's what she did, too. She said, I want to take the phone calls for my son in Afghanistan. He's a Marine over there. And they said, if you do it again, they still threatened her. When it went public, that's when Crane Interiors of Woodbury, there in Tennessee, said, oh, well, we're sorry. Now, the same thing happened to me once. I won't mention the paper. It was a local Los Angeles paper. They couldn't find my house. Daily News. Anyway, when I said to them, I'm going to stop taking your newspaper, they said, well, that's tough. When I went on the air with it and I mentioned it over my radio show, all of a sudden they were saying, oh, Mr. Hendry, we'd like to get this right. And I said, take it and pound it sideways. You want to know why? Because you weren't going to offer that to the regular people out there. You're offering it to me because I got a radio show. And these clowns were not going to offer to Ms. Danford the opportunity to call her son. It went public. Screw you guys. Phil Hendry Show produced by Jason Rance, technical director Rick Johnson, and our associate producer is Dan Northcraft. Until we meet again, I'm Phil Hendry. God bless and forget it.
Phil Hendry.